morning, and to try and get to know as many of you as possible while we're here. That has proven to be beneficial this weekend. We've really gotten to know a lot of folks, and that's been great, and we're excited about this opportunity. I heard a story about a lady who was driving fairly near here, as a matter of fact. She was driving down the interstate, and the police officer pulled her over, and he said, "Ma'am, you have any idea how fast you were going?" And she said, "Well, I couldn't have been going more than 40. And he said, "You're right. You're going 38. This is the interstate. Why are you going so slow?" And she said, "Well, the speed limit sign is right there." And he looked over and he said, "Ma'am, this is Interstate 40. That's not the speed limit. You need to go more than 40 miles an hour. This is 70 miles an hour." And so he said, "You just need to go a little faster. You're going to get run over. You're going to hurt somebody." And she said, "Okay." So he started to walk away, and he noticed that she had three friends in the car with her, and their eyes were really big around, and they were gripping the seats next to him. And he stopped, and he said, "Ma'am, hold on just a minute." He said, "Is everything okay? Your friends look pretty nervous." She said, "Oh, apparently we just got off of Interstate 95. Now, that has absolutely nothing to do with the Bible class this morning. But, you know, I think it's great to be able to laugh together as a family. And I always like to get started that way. We're going to be studying from Daniel chapter 6. And if you want to open your Bibles there, we'll be getting started in just a second. I want you to imagine, since we're not going to have the pictures on the screen, I want you to imagine that you're walking through the woods one day, and you came upon this snarling wolf. What would your reaction be? How would you react to that? Anybody? What would you do? By the way, I expect interaction in Bible class. This is your chance to talk, okay? So, come upon this wolf, snarling wolf in the middle of the woods. What do you do? Anybody? Turn? Yes, you turn around, you run away. Now, raise your hand if your first instinct is to reach out and try to pet it. Yeah, thanks, Trey. Yeah. Yeah, that's not our reaction. Yes, sir. You say, "Oh, I knew I should have known better than to use a wolf as an example in this part of the state. What was I thinking?" Take his picture. Yeah, yeah. Pull out the phone and snap a picture and send that to Instagram or whatever. Okay. Hey, all right. Looky there. Oh, but it's not ready for me, is it? Maybe not. Hey, that would help, wouldn't it? Well, maybe it's on. It says it's on, I promise. There we go. Hey, all right. What do you know? All right, now let's say you walk out your front door, and you see in your driveway, you see, wow, this is not working. You see this sitting there waiting for you. What do you do? Run. A lot more turning and running. Yeah. Okay. My dad used the shovel. You know, that was his go-to choice. All right. So raise your hand if your first instinct is to try and feed it to see what it does. No, you're not going to feed the snake or the shark. See, I'm jumping ahead. Some of you may have heard there is a man named Kevin Richardson whose picture is, I promise, on one of these slides. Kevin Richardson is a man who has been accepted into a lion pride. There's YouTube videos of this guy, and he's wrestling around with these lions, and they're playing with him like they're just big cats. And it's crazy. And you know, my first thought was, wow, that would be cool. That would be fun to actually be in that kind of position. But then I started thinking, I realized, you know, just one of those getting mad at me is a problem, isn't it? You know, never mind that he's surrounded by six or seven or eight at a time and they're just wandering around. And this guy, he lives in South Africa, and he has this enormous, I don't even know what to call it, like a farm or something where he just has these lions that are a part of what he does. And I think that it's examples like that that kind of taint the way we look at Daniel chapter 6. For some reason, maybe because we see lions at the zoo and they're just kind of sitting there looking at us, and we think, well, that's nice. I'm not too scared of that. Or maybe because of examples like Kevin Richardson, who is in this pride of lions and is able to just wander around with them and do whatever he wants. Maybe that makes us think, they're just big cats. Or maybe because we have heard the story of Daniel chapter 6 so often that we know the ending to that story, and it doesn't scare us the way it should. Because the events of Daniel chapter 6 are pretty terrifying. They're pretty awful if you stop and think for a moment about what the punishment was that Daniel faced to be ripped apart by lions and to have faced that the way he did. Open your Bibles to Daniel 6, and I also like to get volunteers to read. So, if somebody would like to read verses 1 through 9 for us so that everybody can hear, that would be great.
We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors, the advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed.
Okay, Darius signs this decree into law. It is unbreakable. It's unchangeable. And one of the first things that I think you may notice here as you're reading this is the wording here is a little bit different than maybe you remember being taught when you were in VBS and learning about Daniel in the lion's den. All right. Thank you, sir. Looky there. All right. Did you notice, if you're like me, when you were young and you went through Sunday morning, Sunday school, and you went through VBS and all of these things, I remember being told, or I thought I was being told, that what Darius does here is he turns himself into a what? A god, right? That he is making himself deity, right? But look again at what it says. Look again at exactly how it's worded there. That's not quite what's happening. See, first of all, we don't have any record of the Persian kings ever turning themselves into deity. And verse 7, if you look closely, you'll see that what they're saying is that Darius is to kind of be this go-between for everybody that wants to approach their god. Whoever their god is, Darius says, you first have to come to me. You need to come to me, and I will decide whether or not you get what it is that you're looking for, you're asking for from your God. I will be the one that makes that decision for you. Now, in some sense, that kind of makes a lot of sense for Darius to do that on occasion, because what that does is it forces everyone to come to him and kind of creates this sense of unity within the kingdom. And so I can see why he would be interested in doing something like this. You know, everybody has to come to him, and he gets to decide whether or not they get. And if he is going to be generous, if he's going to say, sure, I'll let you have this, and I'll let you have that, and I'll let you have that, then hey, that's going to build a good rapport with the kingdom, and he's going to benefit from that. And maybe that'll cut down on rebellion and these kinds of things. And so it makes sense that Darius would be interested in doing this at all. But I want you to notice something. Of all the schemes available to them, of all the ways that the governors and the satraps that they could have tried to get to Daniel, why this plan? Why was this their plan? Because he always prayed, yes. He always prayed to God without fail. Yes, sir. Right, yes, they took something that was actually a strength of Daniel's and were trying to turn that against him, turn it into a weakness. Take a look at verse 5. Notice what it says. We shall not find any ground for complaint against Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. Now, what does that say about Daniel? He's faithful. Yes, he's incredibly faithful, right? I mean, I think that statement, that verse right there, tells us so much about the impressive faithfulness of Daniel. Yes, ma'am. Exactly. You're exactly right. It absolutely demonstrates that this was not a hidden faith of Daniel's. Now, fast forward 3,000 years almost. What about us? What do people know about you? What do people know will push your buttons? What do people know will get under your skin? If there was some way that people could say, here is how we can get to this person, how would they do that with you? And I wonder how many of us, it would be said, we will not find ground for complaint against them unless we find it in connection with the law of their God. Boy, wouldn't that be amazing if all of us, as God's people today, could be described that way? Hey, there's no way we're going to get this person to gossip. We just can't. There's no way we're going to be able to get this person to badmouth their coworkers. It's not going to work. There's no way we're going to be able to get this person to steal anything from the office. It's just not going to work. Wouldn't it be amazing if God's people could always be described that way? Reminds me of a verse in 1 Peter chapter 2. Peter says, "Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." Think about what Peter is saying there. Peter says, there should be no reason for people to legitimately accuse you of wrongdoing. Don't give them the opportunity. Don't give them the chance to accuse you of something that is true. Now, if they want to make up something about you, okay, fine. But your conduct, the way you go about living your life, needs to be such that they just can't find anything to accuse you of. Wouldn't that be nice if that's the way we all lived all the time? So, at this point in Daniel chapter 6, Daniel has some options. He has a choice to make. The decree has been signed. It is in the law of the Medes and the Persians, which is unalterable. Daniel has to do something. How is Daniel going to react? Okay, let's think for a second. First, option number one, I see that they're all actually up there. That's good. Option number one, stop praying for a month. Okay. Remember, this is just 30 days that this law is going to be in effect. So, hey, maybe I could just stop praying for 30 days. Right? That's not so long. That's not permanent. That's not the rest of my life. 30 days, that's all. I mean, surely God is going to understand, right? If this is a life and death situation, surely God is going to understand if I say, "Lord, I'm going to have to take a break." 30 days. That's all it is. Just 30 days. Okay, so that's one option. Option number two is to pray in secret. You know, maybe Daniel could have taken the opportunity to do what Jesus recommends later in Matthew chapter 6. Go into your closet and pray, right? So maybe Daniel could have said, "All right, if it's the praying to God that is going to get me into trouble, that's going to be a risk to my life, and I don't want to take 30 days off from prayer, then the next best thing is to just do that in secret, where nobody can see me. Nobody will notice." And you know, really, when we think about the temptations we face in our lives, I think option number two is the most tempting thing for us to do. When we are challenged, when our faith is challenged in some way in this world, usually the temptations to set aside our faith altogether aren't really that big of a temptation for us. I think usually we're going to stand up against, I am not setting my faith aside. That's not an option for me. But if toning down my faith is an option, maybe I could do that. You know, because I don't want to draw a lot of attention to myself. I really don't want to offend anybody with my faith. I don't really want to do something that is going to stir up controversy. I don't want to do something that's going to make people start asking me questions. And so instead of giving up on our faith, the temptation for us, and the same temptation that we see here for Daniel, is to scale back on our faith a little bit. You know, just in public, you know, I'm not going to make a big deal. I'm going to make sure nobody notices. But what does Daniel do? Somebody, what does Daniel do? He's praying. Daniel doesn't change a thing. Yes, sir. Exactly. Yes. Right. You're absolutely right. Daniel does not allow this to hinder any of his devotion to God. Yes, sir. Right. Right. Sure. That's right. Yeah, it's amazing, I think. I mean, Daniel's faithfulness is so impressive. And in Daniel chapter 3, we see the same thing with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, sir. Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Right, exactly. And, you know, Jesus said, in addition to being salt and light, we're the city on a hill. Why did he use that analogy? Why a city on a hill? Why not a city in a valley? What's the difference? It can be seen, right? City on a hill cannot be hidden. That's right. And we know that Daniel chose... Oh, all right. We know that this was Daniel's choice. Daniel chose to not change a single thing. Let's go ahead and read. It doesn't like me. Let's go ahead and read. If somebody would read verses 10 through 18 for us.
Now,
Okay. I think something else that may have been embellished when you were younger is right here. For some reason, I always imagined Daniel hears about this law that has been passed, and he goes home, and he runs up the stairs, and he throws open the windows, and he gets down on his knees and prays, and that's when they got him. It's not quite what we read, is it? If you look carefully at verse 10, it says the windows were already open. And basically what we're told is Daniel just kept doing the same thing. He just kept doing what he had always been doing. And it's not as if they caught him immediately either. We're told that he continued to pray three times a day. All right, so Daniel just kept at his routine. He continued to be faithful to his God. I want you to think about this. Daniel preferred to face the lions than to go a month without prayer. Daniel preferred to face death than to go a month without prayer. I wonder how many of us could be described in that way. I wonder how many of us would say, no way am I going that long without talking to my God. I think it's also important that we notice, let me ask you this question. What else did Daniel do besides pray? Daniel didn't approach the king. Well, yes, ma'am. He gave thanks. He got down on his knees. All right, that was kind of a trick question. That's all Daniel did, isn't it? He hears this law has been passed. You are not allowed to go approach any god. You are only allowed to approach King Darius with any request that you may have. And Daniel prays. It's the only thing he does. Now, why is that important? Well, I want you to think about what that means that Daniel did not do. When we read those first few verses at the beginning of the chapter, we find out that Daniel is not just ordinary citizen Daniel, is he? Daniel is a man of influence, right? Daniel is a man of power. Daniel is a man respected by the king. I mean, here we're told the king, how much sleep did he get? Not much. We're told that sleep left him. Daniel was someone who could have, if he so desired, when he heard that this law had been passed, this unholy law that had been passed, he could have gone straight to the king himself and said, something has to change. He could have used his power and his influence. Now, we're told that this was the law of the Medes and the Persians. There was no chance that could be altered or changed or undone. But Daniel could have tried, right? I mean, it wasn't like he would be laughed out of the court because he's some unimportant person. Daniel had influence. He could have done something, right? But that's not what happens, is it? Daniel doesn't go demand the law be changed. Daniel isn't outside the palace with a picket sign. Daniel doesn't boycott King Darius. Daniel doesn't write up King Darius on Facebook. He just goes home and prays. You know, I think that what that says to us is that prayer is far more powerful than we give it credit. I think that prayer is our most powerful tool in opposing ungodly society. We get pretty worked up about things going on in the ungodly society in which we live, don't we? We spend a lot of time fretting and worrying over where this is going, what's going to happen to our children, what's going to happen to our grandchildren, what's this world going to be like when they grow up, what are they going to have to deal with, what can we do about this, how can we put a stop to this, what can we... The answer is right here in Daniel 6. Prayer is going to be far more subversive to evil governments and evil societies than anything else that we have available to us. Because what we need to realize is that everything that we're doing, what this battle that is ongoing, is not a physical battle. It is a spiritual battle. And when we're talking about a spiritual battle, when we're talking about the battle for people's souls, the best spiritual weapon in our arsenal is prayer. And I love the fact that Daniel just goes home and prays. That's all he does. Even though that's the one thing he was not supposed to do. Yes, sir. Right. Right. Exactly right. So we know what happens to Daniel. He's thrown in the lion's den. The king seals the stone with his own signet. Oh, see, even I forgot there was another slide. And then the next day, the king comes. Well, that's not going to help. The king comes and finds that Daniel is actually still alive. And what is the reason Daniel says he's still alive? God saved him. God shut the mouths of the lions. Now, let me ask you something. If God does not rescue you from trials, from suffering, from pain and anguish, does that mean that you have less faith than Daniel? See, some shaking their head no. Yes, sir. Sure. Yes, absolutely. Woe is me. Can't believe, why, Lord, are you letting this happen to me? Yeah, that would have been easy for Daniel to say. Yes, sir. Right. Exactly. And that's exactly what we need to learn from some of these examples like Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Yes, sir? Yes, he was. Yep. Yes. Right. Exactly. And you, another great example, I think, is the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul, on a couple occasions, didn't lose his life, but that's as good as it got. The Apostle Paul went through some horrible circumstances. Horrible situations, the shipwreck and all of these things. He was beaten so many times, he was flogged, and all of these different things that he had to endure and continue to endure for the cause of Christ. That wasn't because Paul was unfaithful. It's just that was what Paul was called to do. And I love, there's a quote, I don't remember where I got it exactly, and I'm not sure I'm going to find it fast enough. Where did it go? Some are called to live. Some are called to die. All are called to serve the Lord. And I think that is what we can take away from the lesson of Daniel. Even though he survived, even though some others have not, whether it is through life or through death, it is our responsibility to glorify God in everything. I think I may have saw one more hand at some point. Yes, sir.
I think a couple of quotes that Paul said. He said, to live as Christ and to die as gain.
Yes.
And he also said that don't fear the sword that can kill the body, but fear the one that can cast the soul into hell.
Right. Yes. Yes, sir. I saw another one. Yes, sir. Absolutely. Yes. Yes, absolutely right. Yes, sir. Any other thoughts or comments? That's all I have this morning. I think we have about 2 minutes. Yes, sir. That's right. If we are living by the example of Jesus Christ, it should be no surprise that we're going to have to endure trials. And really, the whole book of 1 Peter is written to people that are enduring suffering for their faith. And what Peter's trying to help them understand is that there is a way for you to live as godly people in an ungodly world. So that's. There's so much in 1 Peter we could actually tie into this lesson on Daniel. Yes, Jim?
Yeah,
right. Right.
Not necessarily his intention at the beginning. It's just what we might be.
Yeah. And think how much different that would have been if Daniel had reacted the way a lot of us react. Pounding his fist. Charging after the king. No way this is going to work. Nah, you know, let's start a riot. Let's, whatever. That would have not been nearly as effective. Yes, sir. That's right. That's all he was interested in doing. Glorify God. That's my job. Was that the bill? Is that what that was? Okay. All right. I appreciate all of your input this morning.